The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house. Doug, you had a lot of travels recently, which we're going to talk much about in just a few minutes, but welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
There we go. I can hear you loud and clear. We're going to do a little mic test.
We did in the
scheme of things here. All right. So before we get to Doug and see what he's been up to and what he had observed in the travels that he attended around the world, really. There, I got my microphone upright. We will talk a little bit about what happened in the markets last week first, and then what's happened this week as well. So let's talk about it. Last week, stocks were up on those conflicting economic reports once again. The Dow inched up just a little bit, S&P up over 1%, and the NASDAQ, of course, picking up 2.38%. All the eyes are on the jobs report that happened just today on Thursday. The jobs report was today on Thursday. Weak manufacturing data prompted declines in the early week, reflecting investor concern over the economy's strength. But stocks then rallied in anticipation of a jobs report on Friday. But then the market reaction was mixed when the stronger-than-expected jobs report finally came out. We have jobless claims today, and the S&P touched a record high intraday before some profit-taking late in that session. So the week closed with a jobs report that underscored the economy's resilience, highlighting the data's mixed nature. The 272,000 jobs added in May were higher than the 190 economists expected. At the same time, wages rose 4.1% from a year ago. That strong jobs report and surprise wage increase supported the narrative that the Fed may now wait longer before considering a move on interest rate. Although the inflation now exceeds the 2% target the Fed has, the jobs report suggests the economy's growth is remaining powerful despite higher short-term rates. And then this week, we had this, which I've been watching closely, the three-month bill auction. It was oversubscribed. People can't get enough of the three-month, one-year, two-year. But once you get out to 20 years and beyond, the banks are having to pull a lot of that back. So keep an eye on that. That will keep interest rates higher for longer, not with the Fed's action, but what the demand is for Treasuries. We had CPI that came out on Wednesday. It came in a little cooler than expected, and, of course, the Fed talked, and they pretty much, well, reiterated, we're not going to change rates now, but we see things kind of turning in the correct direction. I'm still saying probably not in September, maybe by the end of the year, but something's going to have to change. And then Doug, jobless claims came out today in the producer price index. The final number came out. What did that tell us?
Well, those particular numbers told us that the jobless claims were up. And so
Which is interesting, right?
Jobless claims are up and the PPI was a bit down. It was softer, which is the producer price index, which has kind of left the markets a little bit flat today. It's not bad news. It's not the worst news. It's not the best news, but it's good news.
I think really this news starts to underpin what the market's been expecting. You know, mm-hmm. The market rises in anticipation of stuff, then it will adjust on reality, and the adjustment is, okay, we're starting to see things happen. Jobless claims up, prices are starting to come down, and that will trickle through maybe to the next quarter as consumer spending may drop off a little bit. And these aren't huge jobless claims numbers. I mean, it's not the 2 million we saw or whatever in 2020, 2021.
Right.
But, you know, there are jobless claims and they are going up. But then last week we had a strong jobs report. So those are a little bit conflicting. And I think the market, when that happens, has to take some time and digest things just a little bit. So, Doug, you were really busy this past really 3 weeks, running all over the world, actually all over Europe and Asia. And I looked at your travel schedule, and I think it would kill most people, but somehow you were able to do it.
I was able to, yes.
And you were a speaker at the Association of Independently Operated Financial Professionals in Australia, mm-hmm. although the event did not happen in Australia. It happened at three different locations. And then you ended up, after it was all done, heading over to France to the French Open. So we're going to hear a lot about everything when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, when I travel, whether it's for work, for educational purposes, or just for leisure, I kind of communicate with the people around me. I may strike up a conversation with a individual I didn't know before, just because we were hanging out in the same spot. But I rarely get into in-depth conversations with people. Hughes is different. When Hughes travels, he makes a lot of new friends. Mm-hmm. He gets in the weeds with people. He really wants to understand, you know, where they're from, how they grew up. He wants to know if they're from different countries, all kinds of stuff. And Doug, that's really how this kind of all got started in a way, when you were asked to be a speaker for the Association of Independently Operated Financial Professionals in Australia.
Yeah. So, well, I was going to the Australian Open in January, and I was flying from Sydney to Melbourne, and three seats in a row.
Yeah.
No one between me and this gentleman named Peter Johnston, and we struck up a conversation, and he told me later, he said, I thought, oh no, here's another Yank wanting to talk about crocodiles and kangaroos. But very quickly in the conversation, we began talking about what I do for a living, and he began telling me that this group that he started over a quarter of a century ago, AIOFP, and we began sharing notes. And you'll remember, you had been working really hard for a client of yours who has some money in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, you know, you need to get a hold of David. And by the time the flight landed, which was our flight, he's like, listen, I've got a gal who's a financial professional. She'll come down and meet us for lunch. I want you to meet another friend of mine who is the former governor of one of the states. And we're going to have lunch together. So we did that. And we just hit off a great relationship from there. Then when I was flying back, he said, listen, when are you flying back? I said, I'm flying to Sydney. I want to see Sydney Harbor and see it at night. And then I'm going to fly back to the U.S. He said, well, go to this particular area, and me and some other, mates, as he called them, in the financial planning, industry, we're going to meet you and have dinner together, and we'll have a good time. So I did that. And out of that, second meeting, that dinner, he's like, listen, we're doing our offshore conference in May, and I would love for you to be able to come and speak at that conference, because I was telling him about our education, the classes that we do,
right,
and things like that. And so the invitation came, and it was just one of those things that, you know, how often does something like that open up for you in your life?
Yeah, so you were really representing the United States as being the only U.S. representative at this a meeting,
yes,
to talk about how we do things in the United States.
Yes. Yeah. And there was economists from universities in China, from India, just different places of the world. But yes, I was the only U.S. Person speaking.
And I was looking at the topics, which, by the way, when you sent me the kind of the brochure or whatever of the people speaking, some really big hitters, and then there was Doug Hughes, which I'm not saying is a big hitter, but it's kind of fun to see you in those ranks. You guys talked about behavioral economics. I'm interested to know, in that capacity, is it the same there or around the world, like Asia? And where else did you go?
So Asia, and then the island of Malta, which is in the Mediterranean on the way back.
Okay.
But yeah, so when obviously over there was talking about Australian financial issues, but so, and you know, everyone is teasing me about this, but I have the book Confusion of Confusions. And I opened up my first presentation was on that book, the first book ever written about the first stock market. It was written in 1688, Confusion of Confusions, Observations of Someone Watching People Trading the Dutch East India Company shares. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as I was going through that and talking through that, I mean, the heads are shaking. They all know, because it is in our human nature that we don't want to lose. And so stock markets, which can be very confusing, 2022 is confusing, 2023 is confusing, this year is, you know, we're trying to figure out what's next. There's always a confusion about the markets. And so, yes, every bit of it was the same in regards to loss and volatility and lifetime income planning and things of that nature. Very, very similar in that regard.
So there's a lot of practitioners there at the event. And I know we run our practice a certain way. We call it best practices. And, you know, we go to events here. I go to events here in the States, whether at slot event or other events. And I've spoke many times on how we do things, you know, how we attract and retain clients. How do we do everything that we do, you know, and from a planning, investing, everything. And I'm curious, do the people around the world do things the same way we do them?
Well, the sample size here is Australia, and yes, very similar. They do the same thing. There's one big difference, and that is that there are not a lot of financial professionals in Australia. It's actually kind of a dying occupation there. They're really scrambling with what to do, and invited you and I to come down and open an office if we wanted to as well. But so they are really
barely
scrambling.
Have time to run our office,
exactly.
Let alone another one,
right? But they are so a number of people are out reaching out for advice. So there is the same level of how do you acquire clients? Where do you come up with you know, attracting them to come in and making sure it's a good fit? But it seemed like the more people I talked to there, the more that they weren't having to do as much of that, because there's just a need and there's not as many people. The main difference, and we'll talk about this too when we get to it, is that the rules there are very much like what the DOL perhaps is trying to do here.
The Department of Labor here is trying
to
implement some things. That people are fighting in our industry.
Yes.
I look at it and say some things are really good. Some things are silly because it has unintended consequences. For instance, even like back in the day when I went to D.C. and lobbied for small retirement plans. And the reason I did that, because a lot of small companies would not do a plan because of the responsibility they were putting on the owner of the plan to do all this due diligence and stay on top of things. And if they didn't, they could be sued over this. So I'm like, this is silly. We can't have a small roofing shop or an HVAC shop not have a retirement plan because of that. And ultimately, they fixed that. You know, they were able to fix that. But the DOL has some rules like that that don't make any sense. And if they go through, we'll be like, why would I want to help someone with, you know, $50 a month to put it into an IRA when I have that's all this responsibility? And I know it's just interesting to see where they are.
Yes.
And hopefully the U.S. is looking at places like Australia and saying, hey, tell us what really worked well, what did not work well. But it made it so hard that now 20 years later, look how many financial professionals dropped out.
They dropped. And they started increasing educational requirements, which doesn't sound like a big deal. But the way that they put those educational requirements together, you had to go get a diploma or a degree. You couldn't just join an association or just do continuing ed. And so they actually had to grandfather that and go back and say, if you've been in the business more than 25 years and you don't have any blemishes on your record, then, you know, you need to do this continuing ed. So a lot of moving parts there. But you're right. I mean, I talk to people who just simply said, it's not an account minimum, like how much the person has to invest. It's what's the minimum revenue that can be created for my office, or I can't help you as a client. I just honestly can't do it. And so that breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, any practical person knows, listen, we have attorneys that we pay a lot of money to help us do stuff. And if you can't afford the attorney, you're not going to get one. Mm-hmm. So then they have services you can go to where attorneys donate some time, and it's funded through different revenue sources. And I'm assuming somewhere like Australia would be the same way. One quick question before we go to break and dig into the deep weeds on investment, retirement planning, their demographics, all of what's happening there that we feel like could be coming here at some point, is the political environment.
Yeah.
I mean, were they interested in knowing more about our political environment?
Yes.
And what the heck's going on, I guess?
Absolutely.
They got to be, the world's just throwing their arms up saying, what in the heck's going on over there?
There is no doubt. And not only were the Australian, but the different Asian people in the Asian countries, and then also in Turkey. I had a 10-hour layover in Turkey.
Because I think everyone knows,
yeah,
so goes the U.S., so goes the world.
Right. And so there is everywhere, literally everywhere I went, cab drivers, if the conversation came up, people wondered about our political environment and our thought processes. You know, guns are a big subject that other countries talk about. I mean, the Australians, they had a mass shooting in Perth, and that ended gun ownership the way that we own guns. So that's a big subject. Healthcare. They kind of giggle at us saying, you know, you don't have a healthcare system. And in Australia, you'd never hear of a medical bankruptcy. It just doesn't even exist. So, I mean, there's just different things. But then at the same time, they also know and call us big brother. And they would say things like, you know, we need a big brother in the world, and it's you guys. And, you know, just different commentary on some of the wars that are going on right now. But there's a lot of curiosity. They really wonder about us. And they have different views on some different subjects, like I mentioned, but at the end of the day, they do, and everyone wonders who's going to be elected and what is the political environment in America, and how do we have an 81 and a 78-year-old person running for office?
Yeah, great question. Did you tell them we had the same question?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
yes.
All right. Well, when we come back, let's talk about some of the similarities and differences between Australia and the U.S., and our Australians experiencing this, we've already said, some of the same things Americans are in preparing for retirement. I just think it's interesting because we have been talking about things that were likely to happen or be forced upon us as people and as employers here in the United States, and what Australia's been doing maybe for the last 20 years the U.S. may be moving towards. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, what's funny about this show, you know, we've done a lot of different topics, and this isn't, you know, specifically about retirement planning or whatever. It's more just kind of an awareness of how others are doing it and what might happen here in the United States as we move towards really, you know, securing our future. And I found an article that talked about younger participants show strong interest in 401k plans. The situation, I spoke on this at the Harvard Faculty Club back in whatever year that was, 16, I think, on the retirement crisis in America. And my theme was that, listen, I'm all about personal responsibility. I'm all about here are the tools to do what you need to do, so go do it. But the fact is that a lot of people just simply won't do it out of just lack of awareness, stupidity, unwillingness, or maybe it's they just for whatever reason can't do it. So I'm like, you know, at some point we're going to have to, you know, take this thing and to grab hold of it and do auto enrollments, auto escalates, auto investments. And you know what's happening? Auto enrollments, no auto escalators though. And I say automatic, where the employer says, when you sign up, we're going to sign you up at 10%, not 3%. We're going to put auto escalators in, so every year it goes up by 2% or by inflation. We're going to make sure that you're invested on an age-appropriate basis. Well, we have a few of those things in place now. A lot of do auto-enroll, but it's at a low level. Auto-investments, which, you know, is kind of age-based. And you see those target date 2040s and 2045s. But the main reason that we're kind of having to do that is the baby boomers, at least the early ones, you know, they didn't know because they had parents in front of them with pensions and Social Security and maybe a few bucks in the bank, but that's about it. These boomers, starting way back with the death of the pension plans, didn't know they had to save a bunch of money for retirement. So they got such a late start. Now, their kids are being told by other people in the workplace and their parents to, listen, you've got a retirement plan. You need to put 10% in right out of the gate. You know, and when they're 18 to 24 years old, right out of the gate. And what's fun to see is that young participants are showing really strong interest in 401k plans. And I'm amazed at some of the 401ks that I'm seeing of people in their 30s and 40s. But Australia has kind of sort of did a little different angle, and they forced the issue.
Yes.
But they still have the same demographics. But they, 20 years ago, said, okay, we see this problem happening. Mm-hmm. So this is what we're going to do about it. And here the U.S. is really far behind in that.
They have what they call the superannuation, which is a unique name, but it is required. It's a compulsory, which means that it is required to put 10 to 11% on top of your income into a retirement plan for you. That is not to be touched until the
now,
age of 60.
Is this a combination of their of the employee's money and the employer, or is it all employer?
Employer money.
Okay.
Yeah, employer money. And we have people, places in Bloomington that do
well,
this
Indiana
kind of
University
thing.
Does that.
Exactly.
And if, you know, few, yeah. I know a few other employers, but most people do a match, right? Mm-hmm. It's a 4% match, a 6% match, or whatever. That's not the case. This is straight up 10%, but the person can also put money in themselves.
Yes.
So
yes.
They so it would which is like Indiana University.
Right.
And that creates big accounts. And that just makes the cost of that employment go up, makes cost of goods and services to go up. I mean, there's no free lunch here. I mean, we're seeing that in California with the minimum wage,
right.
You know, where you can't hardly get a Big Mac, right? But mm-hmm. So there are some
money cost to it.
Yeah, but they've worked that out over 20 years.
Yes.
I was thinking, okay, well, we already sort of do that because we put in money for our employees for Social Security, but you said they also do that.
They do. They have a pension system. Now, the interesting thing, the pension slash what we would know as Social Security, the interesting thing there is that it is means tested. So every year there is a disclosure of your assets, your income.
That's coming.
Yeah,
that's coming.
It's coming.
I mean, we already means test on Medicare. I've been saying this for a decade. At some point, we'll likely means test. If you're a billionaire, you know, or have certain level of income, they're going to cut your Social Security. I think that might be part of the next big plan. Now, will it be means tested for the people already on it? Will it do what the last big Social Security reform in the 80s did, where it only affected people under the age of 30? I don't know the answer to any of that, but we'll wait and see. But I think eventually that's coming.
Yeah, yeah. There's no question about it, and they've done it now for so long that it doesn't bother them as much. They just the hassle of having to. One of the presenters talked about just the hassle of reporting to the government
right.
All the time, what you have coming in and what's going on.
This just popped like in mind. But you remember that we did the no smoking in restaurants and bars and stuff here in Bloomington, and I was like, you know. Just don't go there. I mean, if you don't want to smell smoke, don't go there. But, well, I remember Wee Willie's, my favorite stop on the south side. They had two smoking booths. But you know how small that place was. It's kind of silly. And I'm like, you know, I still want to go to Wee Willie's, so I might just suck it up and go and still smell like, you know, hash browns, bacon, and cigarette smoke. But, man, when that happened... And after a while, I'm like, man, this is the greatest thing ever. You can go anywhere without smoke. This is a little bit like that. You know, stuff's forced upon you. You're kind of mad at first. But after some time goes by, you're like, it's not too bad.
Well, and, you know, the one of the things that I kept hearing a recurring theme of was that the Australian people are now retiring with more money than they've ever had, which sounds very familiar to hear.
Yeah.
But it's not just some. I mean, the whole group, because of that compulsory contribution, after 20 years now, the money's been contributed and compounded, and now they have these large nest eggs. And so,
it's working out because the retirement crisis in America, my theme was, you know, if they're not going to do it, we're going to have to figure out a way to make them do it. Or do it for them.
Yeah.
And the reason is because we're going to have a bunch of broke people. They're old. They can't work. That we're paying for everything. Paying for their food. Paying for where they live. Paying for that knee replacement. Paying for the rehab. Paying for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, something's got to give at some point. Otherwise, we're going to be in the same boat. And we're getting there, man. I mean, my dad's the earliest of the baby boomers. He'll be 77 this year. And rolls all the way back to people that, you know, are like 60. So it's a big group of people for sure. But it is cool that the younger generation is jumping on board. Real quick, investing, ask you on the way in. You know, most people here invest in the U.S. stock market. And then you might own an international fund or an emerging market fund. When I ask you about, do they invest the same way, mainly in the U.S., the biggest market in the world, and then they invest a little bit. You said no, they actually primarily invest
in the Australian 200, ASX 200 is what their index is. And it's a pretty reasonable index. It does well. They do have maybe 20 to 25% international tilt, which would be U.S., whereas we might say 10 or 15. They're like 20 to 25.
But you said there's some tax incentives
great tax incentives for investing in Australian companies and keeping the money onshore.
I ask you this before, and we'll take a break and come back, but part of the financial planning, obviously, in our world is tax planning.
Yeah.
You know, we want to pay tax when it's the cheapest, which is now, and not be deferred into the future, which we have an unknown future of where taxes are going to go. It was interesting because of the tax breaks on investing where they invest, and then some incentives for actually doing certain things, you would get benefits again. Remember, I wrote about this in my last book. We've always used taxes to incentivize or discourage behavior. You know, we have tax credits for having kids. Right, we have tax credits now for EV vehicles or solar. We're trying to encourage some kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of tax on cigarettes and alcohol because we don't want you to smoke and drink. Really, it's no different. It's just something we've never been exposed to. So when we come back, we're going to talk about that tax system and what are some of the good things that maybe the U.S. can look to and say, yeah, that makes some sense, and we can implement that. And then I would know if that's been spoke about before, because remember, tax policy is like whack-a-mole. If it keeps popping up, it's usually eventually going to sneak through. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Sure Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Australia, and I've never been there. I plan to go sometime. Is about the same size, right, as the United States as far as it is.
If you pick up a map and you can look Google it, like the landmass of Australia minus Alaska is about the same size as the U.S.
And then everyone kind of lives on the right side of the ridge.
Yes, that's on the coast. So our population is about 333 million. Theirs is 26 million. Mm. And they're all along the coast for the most part.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't wait to go. It's a long flight. I've had friends go, have clients have gone. They say it's a must go to Australia. I talked to you about the exchange rate, because when I went to Canada fishing, the exchange rate was like 1 to 140, I think. I can't remember. So my dollar bought $1.40 in Canada, and my entire fishing trip, which is the flight into the camp, the entire week of boats and gas and minnows and food and staying, was $1,700. And that's even going to the little store that they had and grabbing, you know, drinks during the day or grabbing a couple lures. Very affordable. I mean, I swiped my credit card and it said $2,300 or whatever, and it ended up being $1,700 or something like that. It was a really good deal. Kind of similar in Australia. I mean, the exchange rate's about
66 cents to the dollar.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So one Australian dollar is 66 U.S. cents. So if you had, for example, just quick math, if you had 100 U.S. dollars, it's 149 Aussie dollars.
Yeah. Starts to add up.
Yeah.
Now, you weren't in Australia. You were around Asia.
Yeah.
So the exchange rate there was also very, very good.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the dollar is strong. I mean, if you're going to travel, this is the time to be traveling.
Remember, guys, when the dollar's strong, you go get them. Go when it's weak, you keep it at home. That's always been the easy way for me to understand that.
Yes.
Let's talk about taxation in Australia versus taxation in the United States, both from an income standpoint and then retirement accounts.
So on retirement accounts, they have, you know, hurdles and gates just like we do. Age 60 for their super is what they call the annuation. And then if there are certain ways that you take the money out.
Did they ask you why 59 and a half in the United States?
They did. And I was like, why 60 in Australia?
I mean, it's supposed to be round number.
I don't know that number. Maybe you know the answer to that. Maybe it's based upon a certain.
I have no idea.
Average of age. But anyway.
I know minimum distributions, why that. I get that. I completely understand the math behind that. But 59 and a half, I have no idea.
Yeah. So, but they do have certain ways to withdraw your money in certain sequences to get tax-free distributions. And that way it doesn't count against your income in retirement. When it comes to income like we're earning, they have different brackets like we do, and they're working through the same systems that we are.
A lot higher, much like in Canada, they get
higher
taxed
taxes
on everything.
Yeah, I mean, higher taxes. Because, again, they have a health care system that doesn't allow for medical bankruptcies and, you know, just different things like that.
I was in Canada. A lot of rules in Canada. They make it really hard to follow the rules in Canada. They love for you to break them, and they fine you, I mean, especially in fishing. And they complain nonstop, the Canucks did, that, man, so they just basically love dealing in cash because they just don't report it.
Yeah.
Like Greece, you know, it's famous for that. I'm assuming the Aussies are no different.
I think
they probably
think
didn't talk
about
it. Human
nature is back to behavioral economics. If we can lower our taxes, we will.
So there are some incentives then to save, and then also because of the distribution side, if you do follow certain rules and you get special tax treatment. Financial planning, though, again, it's all around taxes for me, investing, saving the right amount of money, income planning. Similarities and differences, are they using the same kind of investment vehicles as we're using?
They do. So I heard mutual fund managers, SMA managers, ETF managers, annuity managers, real estate investment trust managers, life insurance providers.
So like they're our little brother. They're following the suit.
Exactly right.
I find it interesting, though, they've implemented things that we have not yet implemented, but some of the things that we've already talked about, I see that coming. You know, I see it coming. You mentioned already the shortage of financial professionals. Once again, when you make it really hard to be a financial advisor.
Yeah. And to get started and earn an income along the way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do fee for service. They do assets under management. They have a whole menu of ways that you can pay for services. And each one is a little bit different. And you have to provide that to anyone who comes through the door. One thing that was kind of interesting, client disengagement. This is one thing I thought was that they were kind of complaining to me about financial infidelity. Like if a husband or a wife tries to come in and open an account, household or clients, and they try to open an account with the other one there, they have to report that to the government, and they may or may not be able to open the account. Just like we have to get, you know, approval for accounts to be open based on these different things.
I'm only laughing because I know my wife has accounts. I don't know how much is in them.
Exactly.
I think I know where they probably are, but I don't know. But if someone, I don't know, that seems like a little, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't,
it seems a little, they complained about things like that.
Yeah.
Like that's a little overreaching.
Yeah,
so,
well, I would say it is.
Yeah.
Any other observations before I want to get into just your overall, because when I do travel places, I do talk to people, I ask them about, you know, what they think about their government. I ask them about their tax system. I ask them about, you know, all this stuff. And because I want to know the inside. So we're going to take a break and come back and talk about that. But other similarities.
I just think that what's interesting is that the average balance in a superannuation, their retirement account, is, when I just Google this, it's about almost double what ours is. And it just goes back to that compulsory have to put the money in kind of scenario. And so Australia, as they have a baby boom like we do, they're in really good shape for retirement. They're not having some of the same issues that we are. And it's that forced savings, which you've talked about back at the
years
ago. So it's just kind of on display in front of all of us, and now we see it in action.
Well, let's take a quick break, come back, because Doug not only was in Bangkok and other places, but also went to Paris to the Grand Slam. And Doug is a tennis fanatic, and I want to talk to you about why it was so important for him to attempt. And every time he would say, I don't think I'm smart. Do it, Doug, do it.
Yes.
So I'm over here coaching him in the corner like, Doug, you do it. So we come back. We're going to talk about all the different things that he experienced while he traveled. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, on next week's show, I'm going to be talking about the 401k industry entering a second golden stage. Also, the Rothification, I've talked about this, of retirement plans, opportunity, complex, in-plan Roth conversions and contributions have been available for about 20 years, but recent retirement legislation will increase both their use and implementation and complications. We'll talk about that next week as well. And also, The Era, this was in the Wall Street Journal. Thank you, Stu, for sending this. They guest and contributor to the show. A new title for you, buddy. The era of higher savings and bond rates is still going. Don't waste it. I was going to mention this earlier. You know, we talk about a lot of things, and sometimes I'm like, yeah, that's going to really resonate with people. But I'm returning a phone call this afternoon because a listener wanted me to call and talk about my Canada fishing trip. So it just shows you what people are really interested in, Doug. So I'm hoping that this next segment will be of interest to people.
Absolutely.
And they're
going
to get a hold of you and say, can you tell me more about how you actually went to the Grand Slam? But anyway, some observations on travel, Doug.
Absolutely. So a few things. This kind of surprised me. So I was the tickets that I got for flights, a guy from a group called me and said, listen, we're putting the flights together for you. So he's like, listen, Americans do this wrong. When you're flying internationally, you go through the big five carriers in the U.S. You try to use your points and be cute and do these credits and all that stuff. Okay.
Good. I need this information because
yeah.
I'm going to be going to
Tanzania. Yeah. So he said what you need to do is have us order the tickets from internationally and use one of the international airlines. So, okay, what is it? You know, which company? So turns out I got Turkish Airlines and Thai Airlines. And all Boeing planes or Air France, the same planes you'd fly on any other company. But I have to say, my first observation, hands down, the best flight experiences I've had were with Turkish Airlines and Thai Airlines. Hands down. The service, the food, the presentation, the whole thing was just excellent. Bangkok is a very large city. Manhattan has 9 million. Bangkok has 20 million, that gives you any kind of an idea. Everything there, from wealth to poverty, just a lot going on there. The food was exceptional there in Bangkok. And every third or fifth door was a personal tailor. And so Peter Johnston, the guy who's over the group, he set a time for us to go to his personal tailor in Bangkok. We all went down and got suits and shirts and everything. That was a lot of fun. So Bangkok was
have you worn that to the office?
Not yet. They're in the dry cleaner now. I'll get them Friday.
Oh, cool.
So Bangkok was a lot of, I was only there for a couple days. But there's a lot there. I don't know if I'd vacation there, but there's a lot there. Then we went to Vientiane, Laos, which is very third world. It's right next to Vietnam. Stayed in the Crown Plaza, which is where our conference was at. One observation, just like we had a room rented for the conference, every one of the conference rooms were rented by different Asian companies that were having their own conferences there, which was kind of interesting to watch. Third world country, though, and I have to tell you, you know, Laos is the number one bombed country in the world because of our bombing there in the Vietnam War for the supply route for the
right.
Yeah, and so there is a feeling there. I would say there is a bit of a feeling there that you kind of get like that we really bombed that country pretty hard. And so, you know, I would just say it's a third world country. There's some beautiful spots. We went out in the jungle to a great waterfall and things like that were really, really terrific. But the great conference there. Then flew to Malta. By the way, they're making their way from east back west. And Malta is a fabulous island. I would tell anyone, if you're looking for somewhere in the Mediterranean that not everyone is going, Malta is a spot. Lots
gotcha.
Of movies filmed there. Just really good stuff.
General thoughts on, I mean, everywhere I've been, I've been to some pretty crazy places, right? In Argentina and to the, to Brazil, and obviously Europe and all kinds of Caribbean islands and crazy little islands in the Bahamas. Everyone's so friendly and nice, and they love, they love Americans.
Yeah.
So even counterintuitive to maybe what people think, I mean, everyone I've ever run to loves Americans. Maybe it's our dollars they like.
It's the dollars. That doesn't hurt.
Right? Yeah, it doesn't
hurt. I would say that
Zach
again.
Zach Brown has a great song about that, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Bangkok was friendly. Vientiane, Laos was friendly enough, but there is in Asia, I noticed a big language barrier that isn't there in some of the other countries that I noticed, particularly in transportation and ordering food and things like that. But Malta was fabulous for them.
Real quick, accessibility to technology.
Yeah, had accessibility to everything there. YouTube is big everywhere.
Wow.
Everywhere. People are watching YouTube videos everywhere.
Huh. And you mentioned coffee is the unifier of all people.
The great unifier of the world. Everywhere that I've been, coffee shops, cafes, looking for cappuccinos, lattes, different things like that. Coffee is literally the unifier. It is in every country, and they're all trying to do coffee shops, cafes, and that kind of stuff.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, wrap it up, but then we want to get into the whole French Open experience with Doug Hughes. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Doug, how long were you gone? It felt like a month, but it's like 3 weeks maybe?
No, I was gone the 22nd to, I think, the 6th.
So. The value of a team was something I talked about in the 10 keys to winning. And, man, do you have a great team behind you, because nothing missed a beat
nothing
while you were gone.
Nothing missed a beat, yep.
Investments were done. Service was done.
Yes.
You know, you've been busy since you got back. Okay, one of the great things you did was complete the Grand Slam of your own.
Yes,
and
so
going to the French.
I turned 50 2023, April 29th, and the idea was to get all four Grand Slams in 12 months, and so French was the last one, so that's why I went east and made my way back west. Roland Garros, it was a fabulous a pavilion where they have the tennis tournament. They do not have anywhere to buy tickets there, so you had to do it online. So you're constantly competing with robots to get resale tickets.
Oh, wow.
So that was a little bit of a challenge, but it
especially for you.
Yeah, especially.
You don't even have a parking app for Bloomington.
I know. The clay courts were where it was at. Were the first time to see the clay courts, and I got to see, you know, top players, the top player. It was just a really wonderful experience. And, of course, the Olympics are going to start in Paris in just a few weeks. And
yeah,
so,
what did you see there?
Well, it was all kind of chopped up. They're getting everything ready for the Olympics and stands and everything like that. The other thing that happened is that President Biden flew into Paris. So Air
is that
Force
the G
for D-Day.
Oh,
and then,
he that's
came
right. You
back,
were there for
and
D-Day.
And then he went to the G7. But yeah, as I was taking, as I was in the airplane, you could see Air Force One right next to us at Charles de Gaulle Airport.
Oh, that's
where
cool.
Ready to take off. So
that's one of the coolest experiences, seeing the Air Force One plane.
Yeah, but you know, Paris is wonderful. It's very busy, and there's so much to do there. I've only been a few times, just in stayovers. I mean, I've never like toured Paris. But it's a beautiful area, and so I...
So you did it. You did all four in 12
yeah.
months, and there's been times where it didn't make sense.
Yeah, I went for it.
But we went for it, and I know you don't regret that. And we only live one time. You know, that gives us an opportunity to help our clients understand how to spend money, how to enjoy their money, and you're only younger once. You turn 50. Most people that we work with are, you know, your age to, you know, 90. Well, we actually have many over 90, but... You know, and then you get to 90 and you're not doing those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
So while you're younger in retirement, you have those three decades typically. You're go-go, slow-go, no-go. So go-go the heck out of it.
Absolutely.
Do things maybe you weren't already accustomed to doing. You know, get with groups and planners and stuff like that. And just do it. You know, just do it. Because like I said, you don't know if you're going to... No, tomorrow's not guaranteed. And, you know, and when you... People have health scares sometimes. It just makes them think, okay, there's no reason for this. I've got a good buddy over in Cincinnati that, I mean, he just was uptight, wound up, and I talked to him last night on the phone. He's like, I'm like, man, Ray, you've really let things go, because he's doing stuff, spending money, having fun. He's like, hey, you've finally worked me over enough to where I'm like not that way anymore, and I'm loving it. And I'm like,
there you go.
So that's awesome. Well, congratulations, Hughes. What's next for you?
Work.
Back to it, right?
Work.
I love it. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed the show. A little bit of a different thing, but like I mentioned, next week we will be talking about the 401k industry entering that golden stage and the Rothification of your retirement plans. And don't miss out on this era of high savings. It won't last forever. We'll take the long break. I'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.